Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's go live from Fenway Fest, Fenway Fan Fest, whatever it is. Everybody, let's cheer whoever's here. Let's go. Yay. Ready? One, two, three. On the count of three, everybody say baseball isn't boring. One, two, three.
Baseball isn't boring.
Yeah, thank you. And proof of that is my guy Sammy from Play Tessie. All the Play Tessie guys are here. We're going to have the rollout. Oh, look at Hall of Famer Jim Rice walking by. You'll never know who you'll see at Fenway Park. And speaking of which, Lou Merlone. By the way, I'm Rob Bradford. This is
Hi, Rob.
Yeah, and this is Lou Merlone. Hello, Lou Merlone. How are you?
Good. It's good to be here.
Oh, it is good.
I fun. Mean,
it is. Like last time I saw you, you were so sad at McCoy Stadium.
I was
sitting there with broken windows and doors.
It was sad. Yeah. Today was a little bit different. I just did some photos with AC and tech.
Yeah,
that was kind of nice.
So I want to start here, Lou. You saw the Netflix thing. We saw the Netflix thing, and really, I think how it, the best to explain it, what we saw was there was a trailer, pretty much a trailer, and then they showed an episode that seemed like opening day, right? And both of them were, I thought, really, really good. But for you, we all kind of guessing what this is going to look like. For you, what was your biggest takeaways from it?
I like the fact that, and this is, I think people are going to love it because it sort of, it takes in really the mental side of the game. You know, like what these players are going through, right? Like the first clip we saw was like Casas rolling over in a ground ball. And then the next 15 to 30 seconds was him talking to himself between innings, rolling ground balls to the infielders. Like we normally do, we're at the park or watching it on TV, but you don't know what's going on. Like he's talking to himself, you know, like, why can't I just stay back? Put a good swing. This guy's only throwing 90. So the mental sides of it, like Bayo in between innings, what he's saying, it's all might. And I just think seeing the grind and the mental part of the game, I think, is going to be fascinating.
And that really with the players, a lot of them wanted to see that. They wanted people to see that grind. And there is going to be some of it where like one of the things that jumped to mind in terms of possibly uncomfortable moments was when Alex Cora, I think, was talking about when he had to tell the players they were cut. And I remember the one that jumped to mind was Brennan Bernardino. Remember when he was sent down? I'm like, I want the cameras there for that.
Yeah.
And but there was your absolute Sammy. What was your takeaway?
I mean, I thought there was going to be behind the scenes access, and there was. I didn't know that they would be miking up the players. Like the what Lou said, Casas' reaction to rolling over on that ground out. That was really cool for me to see because we see the mouths moving on TV and we think we know what the players are saying. But to really hear it, profanity and all, just thought it was a really cool experience. And we only saw about 20, 25 minutes of it.
Yeah, so we got a snippet of it, which is great. I mean, and even that might have been edited down the road. All right, Lou, let's get to it.
What do you got?
If you want, you can walk around like you're walking a dog. If
sure.
You can do whatever you want. You can whatever gets your juices flowing the most when it comes to the state of the Boston Red Sox. All right, you're here.
Yeah.
You're wearing a Red Sox uniform.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You earned that right. We have not. We just have these baseball and boring T-shirts. But what is, as we sit here right now, because it's a complicated question and a complicated offseason, and there's still time to go, what is your vibe with this team right now?
Well, the first off, when they're introducing the players, and the last guy they introduced, Garrett Crochet, met him back in the green room, so I actually got to meet the pig in person, okay, because that's what he is. I told him, like, if you're wondering why people may be referring to you, and he's like, we started talking about it, but just such a difference maker with his stuff. To me, as I sit here, you look at the pitching side of it, and you say they're really good. I think, you know, the elephant in the room is, what are we doing for a bat, right? And it continues to be that. It's basically you have a lineup out there. You could put a lineup out. You know, you'd probably battle at second base. We'll see how that unfolds. But it's what's changed. You know, where's their more contact, which is the biggest issue they had? They strike out too much. Where's the veteran?
That's
around the cage,
yeah.
Not going to hitting with
yeah.
these players. So to me, that is still the unknown and the hole that's kind of missing.
And to that point, you know, listen, we screamed and yelled about Jordan Montgomery last year.
Yeah.
We can be right and we can be wrong. I think that Red Sox fans want to be perceived as in the big boys club when it comes to spending money. They're in the big boys club when it comes to trading for a guy. Good for you.
Yeah.
Garrett Crochet. But now, the other part of it, you have to spend the money. The guy we all talk about is Bregman. And Lou, you know, at the beginning of the offseason, I probably was like, where Bregman is? But the more you dig into it with every passing minute, every passing hour, every passing day, I'm like, this guy, for what this team needs,
yeah.
I think is a perfect fit. How do you feel?
Yeah, I feel the same way. At the beginning, there were so many options, right? Where's this team going to go? Trades. Who's going to be on this team? Well, nobody from the big league roster was traded. So you're like, oh, okay, so now how are they going to find that spot? And it's obviously at second. When it started and Bregman was the 7-200 range, I was like,
yeah.
I think I'd rather see Arenado, you know, for 3 years and figure that thing out. And maybe there's a little burst offensively. But now I think we're at the point where, what is this? We still don't know, but is this a Chapman? Is this a 3-year with options? Is this a 4-year, 5-year deal? And if that's the case, I think you're all over it. Because now that the dust has settled, you know, because, again, there could have been many avenues. A Teoscar leader could have been in this clubhouse. Somebody else could have been in this clubhouse. An Adames could have been in this club. Well, they're not. So now there's a void of having this leadership. And it's not about dealing with the media postgame. It's about being in the cage, being in the back of the plane, talking hitting, talking about situations with this young, talented group. So now I think it fits even more.
It's Justin Turner, but a better player.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. And, again, if you want to weigh in, we can sneak you in probably 617-779-7937. With Bregman, another part of it is I agree with you. Everyone was so hyper-focused on 7 years. It's not getting to 7 years.
No.
It's not. So the question is do you play the game? Obviously, they're playing the game a little bit in terms of trying to maybe try to get their price. But when do you jump? Like, when is the time where
yesterday.
You jump? Yesterday. And also,
yeah.
And here's the thing. Whatever Detroit does, you just have to beat them. That's because he doesn't want – there's no chance he wants to play there.
Nobody does.
No.
Unless you're looking for that one first payday.
Yeah, they can go all Carl Crawford or Xander Bogaerts and blow him away, and what are you going to do? But, no, like, if you get the sense that you're even with Detroit, give you a dollar more, boom, you're on your way, right?
Yeah. And I think you can even give him a dollar less.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, like, you know – he always asked the question, why are we still here? And we saw it with Burns. Like, why isn't this guy signed? Well, obviously, he's not getting what he wants, or he's not getting it from the place he wants to play. And then, in turn, the longer it went, he just talked to Arizona. Like, I live there. I've got a family. I'd love to just play here for a little bit less, maybe. So I think we're in the same boat in that, you know, I don't want to go to Toronto. I can see where the path of that organization's going the next 3 or 4 years. You know, Detroit, I think, is intriguing to him. But I feel like it's...
Well, it's intriguing because they're interested in spending money on it.
Yeah, and it's a good young team.
Yeah, but it's a bad ballpark.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he's sort of... I've always felt like he's sort of waiting for the Red Sox to come close, right? Like, to just sort of be in the ballpark. Hey, they're offering me $5. Why don't we go $4 in an option? Whatever. You know, even if it's $1 million or $2 million lower AAV, like, just get in the ballpark, man.
Well,
I want to be part of this.
And then there's the flip side of it. We talk about from Bregman's point of view. There's a team's point of view. And the thing that they can rest on is say, well, hey, you know, listen, we got Christian Campbell, we got Sedan Rafaela, we got David Hamilton, we got Vaughn Grissom. But I would say this. It is, and Tim, you tell me if I'm wrong. It is set up perfectly. You play Bregman at second base, which he'll be good at. He was a shortstop in college. He'll be good at second base for a year. Let Devers have another year at third base. Congratulations, Rafi. And then you move Bregman to third base, and then you put the Christian Campbell there.
Yeah, go ahead, Sam.
Hey, you're absolutely right. That's the thing that's frustrating to me is it's so simple. You see what the Red Sox need. Lou, you just mentioned leadership. Bregman checks that box. They need a right-handed bat, ideally one with power that doesn't strike out. Bregman checks that box. Defense, second base, third base, I think he checks that box as well. Seems so simple. I don't know why we're still here. Hopefully it happens. But the scary thing, and Lou, you mentioned this on Play Tessie, what's the backup plan? There's the guys you mentioned, Arenado as well. None of those options are as appealing as Bregman to me.
And it's just about this roster, right? If you had a veteran group, guys, maybe like an 18 team, right? Whatever. It's like older players, five, 6 years.
If you're the Phillies or the Dodgers or
– right.
Yeah, right.
And you want to sit there and say, well, at second base, you know, you can't have free agents all over the place. So at second base, we're going to leave it to the kids to compete for. You know what I mean? Like, that's perfectly fine. But when you are a team that already is loaded with a bunch of young kids, we don't need another young battle. You know what I mean? It's like just, okay, so now it's like you're young in center, you're young in right, you're still young at first, you're young behind the plate, you know, you're still young everywhere. It's like for a young team, yeah, it'd be nice to have a young battle at second, whether it's Campbell, as you mentioned, some of these other guys, Grissom and everyone else, but this team needs a veteran. This team needs an older player. And those other guys, like Campbell is a great player. Someone's going down.
Right. Well, okay, let me ask you this.
Somewhere in the outfield, right, left, center, third, doesn't matter, short.
I know you're going to get going to mingle with the your fans and the fans, but the last you're going to be in spring training, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a question people are asking, and it was asked of me the other day, and I didn't have a definitive answer. Of these guys, of these young players, these top prospects, the Roman Anthony, let's say Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell.
Yeah.
Because Marcelo Meyer is not a fit right now. Those two guys, which guy has a better chance, in your view, of actually making the team?
Well, some things have changed a little because I felt like there was like a Teoscar Hernandez addition. You know, and if that was the case, I was like, I felt like Christian Campbell always has the best chance to win that second base job. And simply because there's depth behind it and plenty of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, if he is he goes off in camp and wins the second base job, you still have Grissom. You still have Rafaela, who can play there. You got Hamilton. You got Romy. You got options. If you put a team together and said, you know what, Roman Anthony's our starting left fielder next year, and one thing happens to one of the outfielders, you got Refsnyder, and you have nobody in AAA. You have nobody.
Mm-hmm.
At least at second, you got a ton of depth. This year, they didn't add any outfielders. You know what I mean? So it's sort of like, well, we don't have any depth anyways, right? So, but I still think Campbell probably has the best chance, maybe because of that right hand.
Isn't it great, though, that there's always one in spring training?
Someone's going to hit 390.
There's Jackie Brown. There's Pedro Seriaco spring
Steve
training.
Selsky.
There's Steve
Brady
Selsky.
Sizemore.
Oh, great, Paul.
Young.
Right? But there's Alan Webster throwing 99 out of nowhere. But isn't that's what we look forward to? That guy,
we do.
Like, oh, my goodness. There's the guy. He is unbelievable. Yeah. Cesar Crespo makes the team.
And, you know, we're going to have the same conversations. At least you'll hear it from me. And the biggest question is, who are they doing it off of, right? Like Campbell, Meyer, whatever, Anthony, they can hit 400 in camp. Well, early on, if they're facing double-A, triple-A pitchers that they faced previously and they're hitting them, that's awesome. But, like, watch that start against Burns. Watch that start against Cole. Those two or three. Watch what the start looks like against the real big league reliever coming out of the pen. Those are the ABs that matter. But still, someone's going to hit 400, and it's going to be – he should be starting over player
X. It'll get us through all those spring training games,
yeah,
right?
Well.
So last thing is, when you did go down to McCoy Stadium with the Section 10 guys, did it hit like you thought it would hit?
No, I didn't know what I was in for, you know, to be honest with you. Like, it was weird because I had spent – parts of like seven seasons in a row. Like I don't think I played 300 games. Like it was always like 30 one year, 40 the next. I think 55 or 60 is the longest I ever was in a season. And then when you looked from the outside, when you got in and saw all the windows blown out and chairs on the field and the field demolished and everything demolished, you saw, like, for me, the hard part, to be honest with you, because that place was really more about family than any great memory I maybe have playing AAA. But the memory to me was like the family section seeing my mom and dad at every game. Or the family section seeing cousins and relatives, aunts and uncles, like that. Seeing it deserted the way it was, seeing it beat up and trashed the way it was, that was the hardest part of walking in there. You know, we played catch. It was cool. It was a cool experience. I'm glad I did it. But it was really hard to see.
All right, we're turning the page.
All right, turn
the page.
All right,
Fort Myers, Twin Peaks, let's go. All right. All right, Lou, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, you got it, guys.
All right, we're going to be right back. Brian Abraham, farm director of the Boston Red Sox. The Cavalcade of Stars are coming through here. We're at Fenway Park for Fenway Fan Fest. We appreciate everybody who's cycling through, everybody who's cheering, everybody who's partaking. We're going to have a lot more coming up. But right now, Tom's going to trend. All right, welcome back to everybody. To Fenway Fest. That's what this is. We're at Fenway Park. I'm Rob Bradford. Sammy from Playtessie. All the Playtessie guys. They're each going to get an hour. They've earned that. Their brand has never been hotter. Everybody knows that. And speaking of brands never being hotter, oh my goodness, Brian Abraham, farm director of the Boston Red Sox. Oh, security, hold people back. Let's go. All right.
Hey, guys.
What's going on?
Not much.
How you doing?
Thanks for having me.
You look good.
I appreciate that.
That's a good winter vest.
Yeah, thank you. I'm dressed Dressed to the nines.
Red Sox must have given you a raise.
I thought this was going to be on TV, so I dressed nice.
Oh, there's always someone looking at you.
Yeah. I was told I had a face for radio.
No, that's who said that? That's not true.
My mom, I think, told me.
You've also, by the way, we have in the break, this was big news. In the break, Brian Abraham became the third member of the Boston Red Sox to commit to getting a baseballs and boring tattoo if the Red Sox win the World Series.
In 2025.
Yes, I mean, not like
you can't leave it that open ended.
2025. If you win it, yeah. So I got Alex Cora, Pete Fatsy, and now Brian Abraham.
I just turned 40, and all the cool I'm going through a midlife crisis. So I actually want to get a tattoo. You've inspired me.
There's no, I mean, you see this?
Yeah,
it takes 20 years off.
Yeah, pretty cool.
All right, speaking of taking 20 years off, you oversee a bunch of 20-year-olds. Well, that's an excellent segue. Who is it? Let's talk about where the rubber meets the road when it comes to top prospects: Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell, Marcelo Meyer. But before we get to those, I've always found it interesting the dynamic of a farm director when you trade away guys. Like, these guys you develop, you've seen them drafted, you've developed them, you got the chance to know them, and you had four guys who were traded away in this deal. All of them you got to know. From a farm director's point of view, that must be a very, very unique. You know, it's part of the deal, but still, it must be a unique situation.
Yeah, it's bittersweet, but I think at the end of the day, all of us in the front office, all of us who work for baseball operations of the Boston Red Sox, the goal of the organization is to win a World Series, is to contend year in and year out, and our job day to day is to develop players and allow them to get better and optimize their talents to create value for the organization. Hopefully that's in Boston, but the reality is sometimes that might be for trade, that you can acquire a top end of the rotation starter like Garrett Crochet, and player development's exciting to me because of the personal side. You get to know people, get to understand what makes them tick, why they have success, why they fail, why they struggle, how they can make adjustments. So getting to know those guys at a personal level is where it can be difficult to lose them. But again, at the end of the day, where our jobs are to put the organization in the best place to win a World Series, and I think that's what we did.
All right, and you did an excellent job of that. I do remember this. This is going to be old man yelling at clouds, but when I did the award-winning book, Chasing Steinbrenner, I was up in the office when they did the big Scott Sauerbeck trade, and I remember Theo saying to Ben Sherrington, who was a farm director at the time, sorry about that, Anastasio Martinez, he's out. And I think Ben's comment was, well, that's what they're there for, right? Really. Yeah. Yeah, that, and that's, I'm sure that.
Yeah, no, I think actually Brez said a similar thing to me, and again, similar response. I think that's you hope that you are developing players to again impact Boston, but if not, allow you the opportunity to impact the team in a different way.
All right, the biggest news to come out of this so far today, besides me revealing that the City Connect uniforms are going to be green, that Alex Cora said that identified Roman Anthony. You were there, Sammy, right? When he said, yes, he's athletic. He's a more energetic J.D. Drew.
Yeah, J.D. Drew with energy.
Drew with energy, yeah. Right?
Okay.
All right,
that's interesting.
All right, so.
Not a bad comp.
So Roman Anthony's down there with the Trevor Story guys and everything. So how do you view his, let's say, from a year ago to now, the life and times of Roman Anthony? How do you view him?
Yeah, a player's individual development is always so unique for each player. I think for Roman, coming in the last year, not being a part of Major League camp, still trying to get a taste of the upper levels. He had finished in Double A. I think there were still some questions about some of the adjustments he needed to make, hitting the ball in the air more, pull side, impacting the baseball. But after the year, or the consistency that he showed throughout the year, being able to do those things, getting to Triple A and quite frankly having putting up even better numbers in Triple A, I think you see as a guy coming in here competing for a spot in spring training, competing to go to Major League camp. And I think any player for us that is on the AAA roster is going to be considered someone who can compete for a spot in the big leagues and in Major League depth. And I know Brez feels very strongly about that during the season when we're working with our players. And, I think Roman is no different. So I think the progress he makes, now he's honing in the skills, trying to really, I think, take some of the smaller areas that he needs to improve upon and touch on those, whether it be improving his K rate just a little bit or improving his walk rate a little bit, you know, barreling baseballs up more consistently, smaller things that allow him to be a really good player for us in the long term.
I'm going to show him video of Jackie Bradley in 2013 spring training. That's what I'm into.
I was there.
This can be you. Like,
I was there.
He made the. I mean, he made the team, right?
He made the team.
Big walk, a couple walks in opening day.
I think he had a big hit. I think he inside out of the ball down the third baseline too for a double.
All I know is this: is that nobody would have thought that he would have made that team coming out. And right, like you said, you were there.
Yeah, he had a. I mean, I think he went. We were playing against Miami. He went Oppo line drive home run, and everyone was just like, who is this?
Yeah.
I mean, it was incredible. He had one of those springs that, you know, are talked about for years.
But that's what – there's always some of the – Mookie was kind of the same way, I think, the next year, if I remember right. I mean, there's always these guys that, yes, they're facing a lot of times B-level pitching, but who cares? Anyway, go ahead, Sammy. What do you got?
I want to know an under-the-radar guy that fans who aren't insane like me who check the prospect rankings, who do you want fans to know about that they might not have heard about yet?
I think, you know, we just added two guys to the 40-man. I know they're not they are 40-man players, Hunter Dobbins and Yonsen Garcia, that are, you know, bigger names. But I think both guys have kind of slowly crept through the rankings. And, you know, Hunter Dobbins being a depth starter for us, you know, being in AAA, but a guy who has, you know, five pitches that can get both sides of the plate out. And then Yonsen Garcia, who's a plus defender, who impacts the baseball, who drives the ball over the wall. I think those two are kind of ones that come to mind. Connelly Early is an interesting name to me out of UVA a couple years ago. Left-handed pitcher, mid-90s fastball, big curveball, cutter that gets it on right-handed hitters' hands. Finished in Double-A last year. Again, another kid who's just really excelled and improved dramatically, has really improved his velo significantly over the past couple years and has made him someone who can be potentially a starter at the upper levels and potentially in the big league. So those are kind of the names that come to mind. I mean, I know you say people that names that people aren't aware of, but it's hard to not talk about like someone like Franklin Arias, who's younger, who isn't a top 100 prospect that I think does amazing things on both sides of the baseball, was only in Salem last year, but just has a lot of opportunity to grow, and I think the sky's the limit for him.
Not a top 100 guy, but I'd like to know about Carlos Narvaez. A lot of chatter about him as maybe the backup catcher on the major league roster. What scouting report can you give me about him?
Yeah, really strong defender, catch-and-throw guy, receives very well. I know his framing numbers have been very positive over the last couple of years. And I think when you look at that, the defensive position behind the plate, consistency, being able to handle a pitching staff, being able to be a plus defender is so valuable. Obviously, if you can hit, I think, you know, he's Winter League does not count, but I think if you got a Winter League offensive MVP, I think he might have that in the Venezuelan Winter League. He raked down there. But, you know, anything you can add with the bat is a positive. So I think he is going to bring a ton to the organization for upper level catching, and we'll see what happens in terms of roster spots, in terms of who's backing up who. But I think when you have a strong floor defensively, that gives you opportunity to have a spot.
All right, Brian Abraham, Farm Director. Goals for 2025: number one, win the World Series. Number two, because you win in the World Series, get a baseballs and boring tattoo. Number three is to use password Garcia's first name as your password.
That's I don't think I know how to spell that. Working on it.
That's goals, right?
Yeah.
Goals.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we appreciate you, and we look forward to many, many appearances on Baseball Isn't Boring throughout the year.
No, of course. Happy to be here. You guys are great. Baseball isn't boring. It's, you know.
You don't sound convincing when he said.
You know, there's a lot of fans here. I don't want to rile them up.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. All right, everybody. All right. Brian Abraham, Farm Director of the Boston Red Sox. We appreciate him. So, listen, I mean, this is what it's all about, Sammy. Sammy of Play Tassie Podcast. And as we said, we have Liam Hendricks coming in. Come on in, Liam, if you want. All right. Liam Hendricks, like the cavalcade of stars, keep coming. He's not wearing shorts today. He was wearing shorts. Come on. I mean, this. Wearing no shorts today? Sammy, Rob Bradford here.
Sammy,
and,
how we doing?
And so one of the things you said, we were hanging out the other day in the clubhouse. You said you don't buy things from gas stations. Like, I'm like, because I'm like, here, have a 5-hour energy.
Uh-huh.
And it made me rethink my whole life. I got to be honest with you.
Well, yeah. I mean, except for a hot dog, I'll still eat a gas station hot dog.
Of all the things you're going to eat at a gas station, is a hot dog?
Well, it's a hot dog. It's already damn near processed into hell. So
that's fair.
I think we'll be all right.
That's a fair point. But again, I just wanted to pass that on because you made me rethink my entire existence.
Well, I don't know anybody that still uses 5-hour energy. I was actually surprised I'm still a company.
Wow. This, you don't get looking like this just by accident, unfortunately. Yeah. But anyway, so thank you so much for joining. So going through this whole process, and you know, the first question I have, the Netflix thing, right? We had talked about this. You guys hadn't seen this. Like, you guys hadn't seen anything from it.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, you didn't see the
I didn't get invited.
Oh.
I think they only invited active guys, I guess. I don't know.
Let's just say they had a clip. They had a real quick clip. And I had heard about this, about something that you wear when they're coming off the field.
Yeah, so it was a gift from one of the rehab guys to another pitcher who refused to wear it, and I have no inhibition, so I decided to don it, and then wandered around the clubhouse. It was a leather dog mask.
Yeah, yes, it was another dog mask.
May or may not have come with a harness and a collar and... And look, I have no issues, so I was like, screw it, I'll do it. Yeah. I've got dogs, it's fine.
Yeah. And so, because we're going to see this, I think, so was it?
So I don't know if Netflix got too much footage of it. I was a little careful with that because...
Well, they showed it at least once.
Okay, at least once.
So how often was this?
Very rarely. It wasn't that often. I know that we did a little... We had a big game one day where I didn't make it out to the bullpen, just doing some rehab stuff. And so I donned at that time and was dancing in the clubhouse. So, and that was when Netflix was there. I know that. I did keep my pants on, which is a huge plus.
Hold on, let me write that down.
Yeah, Liam
Hendricks. Yeah.
Yeah. But I ended up, funnily, I ended up with a blister on the bottom of my foot just because, you know, dancing in socks. My dance moves are really just basically side to side, so it's not great.
let me ask you this: it sucks when you don't get a chance to pitch, right? And I know how much you want to compete and you want to get back. But you were immersed in this team, in this community, in Boston. You took a scooter to the park, which I give you great credit. And you had, like, a legit helmet. So
I got a motorcycle helmet.
Yeah, you got
not messing around
and
with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so I don't know if I had ever showed – like, I showed up – I fell off a scooter on my face in Colorado.
Is that what happened?
It was. Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. That's exactly – so but I did.
Permanent damage or
– Yeah, well, it was – I mean, it was like, boom, on my face. But so, I applaud you for changing my life and saying wear a helmet.
Always.
But you were immersed in Boston for this time. And so was it what you expected, I guess?
Well, let's just put it down to how human history went. The cup was invented about 50 years before the helmet was.
Okay.
And so that just puts you exactly where everyone's thoughts go. But no, it was really important for me to be in a clubhouse because I had planned on being back last year. It didn't quite work out, but I didn't want to be that guy who spent the entire time in spring training in Florida and then just show up and everyone has no idea who I am.
Mm.
I wanted to make sure I ingratiated myself into not only the team but also the community, because both my wife and I, we pride ourselves on what we can do away from the field. And we want to make sure we ingratiate ourselves into this Boston atmosphere and make sure there was anything we could do philanthropically, we could handle it from here rather than trying to do it logistically from somewhere else.
Mm. Sammy, what do you got?
You've got an accent, Liam.
Slightly.
Slightly. We do too in Boston. Yeah. Not me. I'm fortunate. But how would you describe the Boston accent to someone from Australia?
It's pretty much Australian. Neither of us pronounce our R's.
Yeah, true. Well, I think ours is more like sandpaper sound.
Yeah, I mean, we're like hick British, so...
Did you say you bonded with Gordon Ramsay or something?
Oh, I mean, that was one of the big benefits of what I was able to do away from... Anyway, talking to him, which is fantastic... as you can see, like, very similar vocabularies. And so very similar. Like, I think he's the same way I am, where it's like in the kitchen and I'm on the mound, we're very similar in that regard. And then away from the field, we both have split personalities where we can be a little bit more down to earth and a little bit less chaotic.
Okay, I'm a huge Gordon Ramsay fan. I think I watch every single show that he has. What was he like? I gotta know.
He was fantastic. He was just such a humble guy and was just... like, just so knowledgeable at what he does. Mm. And just hearing all that sort of stuff. But not only that, like, it's always funny, like, how terrified people are to throw a baseball. Yeah. And it's like how they come out, they're just like terrified. So we warmed him up a little bit and he was good to go. But yeah, it's just the nicest guy. He invited us if we're ever in London to come out to one of his places. Oh. And yeah, that was fantastic. And if you haven't seen it, Nick Kyrgios does a TV show and Gordon Ramsay was episode one and it was phenomenal.
Is he a tennis player?
The tennis player.
Yeah, the Aussie tennis player. Yeah. He retired. He was doing this TV show. I found it on the plane when I was actually headed back from the Winter Caravan last month. And yeah, it was fantastic.
A great TV. Really tons of personality, that guy.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. It's like he's one of those guys where it's like, I love it. It shows off. And he's the amount of people he's gotten to tennis because of his personality is phenomenal.
So you mentioned first pitches. On the podcast this week, I had Josiah Gray, pitches for the Nationals. Mm-hmm. He caught Travis Scott. Travis Scott was like his bucket list guy, right? So I asked him, I said, who are your top three or top five that if you had to catch a first pitch? Because like you did, you adeptly have caught a lot of first pitches. He had mentioned like Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade immediately gets on social media, let me do it. So this is your opportunity. I'm going to make this. Who do you want to catch the first pitch so we can make
question.
It happen?
This is a good question. Look, I am a massive hockey guy.
Oh, all right.
And came into the season, full disclosure, came into the season more of a Montreal fan, which is tough around here.
That's all right.
But now I have multiple Bruins jerseys, have gone to almost any game we can to. Was at the game the other night. So for me, it's like I would love if, again, Boston, Bobby Orr.
Oh!
That would be a great one. Yeah, that would be, and anyone like any of the historical Bruins, or for me, like my hockey god growing up was obviously, for me, it was Carey Price.
Yeah.
Number 31, same thing, goaltender for goalie for Montreal, and that's a big one there. But yeah, anyone's doing hockey, and then look, I'm a huge Australian sports fan.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, you know what, I would love Ian Thorpe. He's a multi-gold medalist swimmer from Australia, just an absolute icon out there. So it's like anyone who's, yeah, as I said, like I catch them all, but I want to treat everybody the same. So I go out there and have conversations with them, learn about them, learn what they're doing, and it's been a fantastic experience.
This is the most cliche question of all. Who is your favorite Australian rules football player of all time?
Corey McKernan, also number 31.
Sammy's too.
I actually know who that is. Yeah. I think that's the one guy I know.
Yeah,
so that would be my favorite by default.
Yeah, so he so we have a medal in Australia for the football. It's called the Brownlow, but it's the best and fairest. Mm-hmm. So you get voted on each week. It's done by the umpires every week. You get 3, 2, or 1 votes for best on ground. 3 votes is obviously the best, but if you get reported and suspended at all, you are ineligible to win.
Really?
So he won it.
I'm like, get it, let me write that down. So the last thing is, Liam, like, this is sort of a nuts and bolts team building reliever question. I'm always been a big proponent, I think, for building bullpens, and I think the Dodgers showed this, and some other teams show this. To have guys who just know their existence. Like, it's fine to get some guys, and they have high spin rates, and we're going to see what, like, I get it. You know, like, we saw Luke Weaver, like, emerge into that, right? But there is something to have veteran guys in the bullpen who know how to get through a season, who know how to live up to the big moments. You know, Blake Treinen at the end there. Like, so what's your perspective of that? Of just that existence, the importance of veteran leadership in a bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, former teammate Blake Treinen as well. Right. Played with him with the A's. And I learned a lot from him when he came over, even though we're roughly the same age, roughly the same experience. He taught me a lot, and it's something I've been very blessed in my bullpen career. I've been around guys like LaTroy Hawkins, who had 20 years in the big leagues, Joaquin Soria, who had closed and done a multitude of roles all throughout, Ryan Madsen, John Axford. But then also you look at the upper echelon, the kind of Mount Rushmore of current day closers, which is Corey Kimbrell, now being able to work with Aroldis Chapman this year, Kenley Jansen last year. I've been very, very, very lucky who I've been able to work around. And look, I think the veteran presence, especially in the bullpen, because you're out there for 9 innings, 7 innings, however long the guy's out there for 162 games. Even if you're down that day, you're in the bullpen. And so you just talk a lot. And whether it's the basis of like learning, okay, this is how I get ready for my role, or hey, this is what happens when I'm struggling in my role, or this is what I need to do when I'm doing well, or this is what I need to do when I'm like, I'm not sure where I'm going to pitch, and this is how I get ready. It's just all those little things, especially with the young guys coming up that the Red Sox have in their system. You got a lot of guys that coming up that can learn a lot from the guys out there, and that just pays dividends as it goes on. I think with guys like Breslow, Bailey, Cora, all former players,
yep,
these guys know the importance of veteran leadership inside of a clubhouse, and it may not work that year. It may not be for on the field stuff, but what they can bring and what they can bring to the next 10 years with those guys in that clubhouse, it's just you're not able to kind of contain what it can do.
Yeah, man, you're speaking my language. That's I think it's so important because the baseball season's so long, and yes. and also I'm going to be honest with you, Liam. Like I think the baseball's gotten too caught up in. Oh, we can take a flyer on these five guys and make a bullpen out of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you get the guys that catch lightning, but let's be honest, I was one of those guys, so I'm very appreciative of that because I got...
But there were other guys there, you know...
Yeah, I got DFA'd by the A's in 2018 and then got called back up in September, ended up starting the wild card game, and then was an all-star in 19. Mm. And that wasn't because of what I was doing in 18. Mm. That's just because of what I was able to turn into from the veteran leadership and... to be honest, figuring out myself who I am, and that's something that I've taken into everything else since then. But
all right, well, you've turned into an extremely important presence here in Boston with the Red Sox, even though you have the questionable decisions of eating hot dogs at gas stations. But
it's good for your bowel movements.
Again, let it be said, let it be done. Right, thank you, man. I appreciate you coming by.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, the great Liam Hendricks. All right, we're here at Fenway Fair. Everybody, all right, let's go. All right, Fenway Fast, we got everyone coming through. We appreciate everybody, all the fans here. We appreciate all the support that we have, and we appreciate Liam Hendricks and everyone, all the players and coaches and everybody involved in this whole thing. Because this, Sammy, is a great day. And why is it a great day?
It's a great day because baseball isn't boring. Let it be said. Let it be done. I'm just trying to think of all your catchphrases.
All right, okay. All right. Well, we'll take some calls, 617-779-7937. We got more coming up. We have who do we got? We have Tristan Casas at 2 o'clock. There is no better way to lead into Tristan Casas than a call from Jeff from Watertown. All that coming your way after this. All right, welcome back. Fenway Fest live from Fenway Park. I'm Rob Bradford along with Sammy from Play Tessie, all the Play Tessie guys. Gordo's going to be coming up for the next hour. He's going to get a chance to reunite with Tristan Casas, who's at the top of the hour. We got plenty of things to talk to him about. We appreciate everybody who's cycled already through for this show for the last hour anyway. Lou Maloney, Brian Abraham, Liam Hendricks, and we got more coming. We not only Tristan Casas, well, we have Christian Campbell, Roman Anthony, a bunch of other people. It's a great time to talk about the great game of baseball, Sammy, correct? Yes,
sure.
Or no?
Sure is, Rob. It's always a great time, but extra special today at Fenway Fest. Pretty pleasantly surprised with the event, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I'm having a good time.
All right, it's just because you have a credential.
Yeah, and I got this cool wristband. Yeah,
baseball's a boring wristband. But people are lined up. It is definitely different. But one of the best things about this event, whether it was at Foxwoods or Springfield, it's a chance to see people that normally you don't get a chance to see. You might interact on social media, and certainly all the players are in good mood. It's sort of like spring training in that sense. And Sammy, you were at spring training with the Play Tessie guys. You will be again. Like, that's the biggest thing. Everyone's in a good mood, right? It's not like the beaten down of the season.
Yeah, everyone's in a good mood. It's a bit of sensory overload with all these familiar faces, like you said, from social media, the players. We just had Liam Hendricks on, Lucas Giolito walking by, Jim Rice walked by. It's a lot going on, so if you're into that.
Oh, Giolito walked by? I missed him.
He actually waved to you. And you.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
It's not Oh, wow. All right, well, whatever.
It happens.
Listen, I can't be bothered. He is going to be our movie critic in spring training.
Yeah, so I heard he's a big movie guy, and Pat is also a big movie guy, so we're going to have to set up something where they chat about cinema.
Well, what we're talking about right now is a great game of baseball. There's no better person to talk about it than Jeff from Watertown. Jeff, what's going on, my friend? How are you?
Hey, Bethro. Hey, Sammy. How you guys doing?
Good.
Bethro, I was, for a long time, I was a regular caller to Mustard and Johnson, and this was my favorite day of the year. It was just so much fun to, you know, have to be in Fenway and hear, you know, talk baseball in the winter, and the fact that it's snowing, it's just perfect. Like, this is just like ideal. So I'm having such a good time all day listening to the show. I just don't want to go anywhere but just listen to the show. It's great.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It used to be Christmas at Fenway, right? That's what it used to be. Yeah, and so obviously they moved it. Had the big blowout in Foxwoods, and then they moved it to Springfield the last couple of years, and now it's at Fenway. And it's
a
little bit different.
I thought that was a mistake.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why they. I mean, you can have theories about why they did it. They didn't have a town hall for one. So
why is that?
I have no idea.
Yeah, Fenway in the snow is perfect to talk about hot stove baseball. And you know, I just a couple of things. One is, like, I used to think under the Heinblum administration that we took one step forward and two steps back. Now I feel like we're taking two steps forward and one step back. But I still don't understand. And I thought Breslow today was great. You know, I'm a Breslow guy, and I can tell that he's getting more comfortable, more confident. But are they really going to take Jaren Duran to arbitration over $500,000?
Is that really? I would be shocked. We can sit here, and everybody said this is the most common sense thing of all time. You don't go to arbitration over $500,000, and they know that too. I mean, the arbitration
is...
Go ahead.
Get back, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, Jeff, I've gone through enough of these iterations of arbitration, including when David Ortiz got to the day. And so I had said to David Ortiz, I said, hey, listen, can I interview you right after your arbitration hearing? It was at the Vannoy in St. Petersburg. He's like, sure. So I go to the Vannoy. I stay overnight in the Vannoy. He's nothing settled that night. He is walking to the room for the arbitration hearing, and they settled it. Usually, you know, it almost never gets there, especially the Red Sox had that unbelievable run of years upon years upon years of never doing it. Everybody knows that you don't do this over $500,000.
Right. And I hope to God, because that would just be, it would just be stupid. It would be penny wise and pound foolish or whatever. The other thing is, the other thing about Breslow's interview is when he talked about making a trade and saying to focus on what you get and not what you gave up. And that's classic Theo Epstein. And like for the first time, like I never really understood the connection of Theo Epstein with the club. And I didn't really think that he had like a major influence. But I know those two guys are close. And it was just sort of to hear Breslow say that and to just say like, "Hey, we're focusing on what we're getting."
Yeah, well,
that just made me feel more confident.
Yeah, and he said, you know, he said a couple things that are the right things to say. Right? The aggressive, the decisive. And that's a thing that, you know, I've been pounding ever since I think J.P. Ricciardi came in the podcast, Jeff, and he said going back to when he worked for Billy Beane, that was his credo, right? And it makes all the sense in the world. All the sense in the world. And I like to believe that that is the case. And I do not believe that with a lot of GMs in this world right now that is how they think. They obsess over who they're giving up, rather identifying who they're going to get.
Yeah, no, that was Heinblum's problem, I think, more than anything, is not wanting to give up, give up anything and wanting to win the deal. But anyway, this was a great day, and it got me fired up, and I'm looking forward to spring training, and regular baseball isn't boring, so have a good time, and I look forward to spring training.
All right, Jeff. Listen, the baseball season's not the same without you, so keep on calling in. Keep on being part of the family. We really, really appreciate it. All right, the great Jeff in Watertown. So we're going to take a quick break to make room for Tristan Cass, who's coming up. We get a lot of questions to ask him. He just witnessed for the first time a snippet of the Netflix documentary, which he is a big, big part of, as we said. We got other people coming up as well, Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell, the whole works. It's a great time to be here at Fenway Park at Fenway Fest. I'm Rod Bradford. That's Sammy Gordo, play Tessie. Also, he's coming up next. Be back after this.